is a very beautiful Yom Tov, and it is the Yom Tov of Noshim, of women. And the question is why? Why, first of all, how is it different for women than men? And number two, why? Why do women have a special, unique relationship with the festival of Rosh Chodesh more so than men? So there are a number of reasons. The first most common reason, this is a reason which is cited in the Pirkei D'Rabbi Eliezer. In the Medrash Pirkei D'Rabbi Eliezer, there's something which is very, very popular. And the word, I'll read you the words literally inside from the Medrash. Nosan lohem ha-kadosh baruch hu sichoron ba'olam hazeh. Every word of the Medrash is precise. Every word of the Medrash, it's not like, you know, a newspaper article. The words of the Midrashim are filled with precision. And that opening line is a little bit frightening, where it says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave them reward in this world. In this world, the fact that it's a festival for them is a reward in this world. Generally, we have a principle, there is no reward in this world. This world is a world of work. The reward is in the next world. Maybe the peiros we say in davening every morning, Elu dvarim sha'adam oichel peroseyem ba'olam hazeh, v'yakeren kayem eslo le'olam haba. Peros. In this world, the most you get are peros, fruit. But the ikar sachar is in the next world. And the Medrash says, according to the Medrash, what happened over here? I just had one second. Here it is. Nosan lohem hakadosh baruch hu sichoron ba'olam hazeh. Didn't say the peros, it said the primary schar in this world. Shehein meshamrois rosh chodashim yoiser min ho'anoshim. They observe it more than men. The nosan lohem sichoron la'olam haba. And then the Medrash goes on to say, don't think that's the end. Don't chas v'shalom think that that's the only reward. There's going to be an additional award for Rosh Chodesh, for the Noshim in the next world. In the next world, they're going to be renewed. What does that mean? This, I have no idea. No one knows what this means. It's very mystical. Just like the moon, every month is renewed. The middle of the month, the moon wanes until it comes to a point where there is nothing. And then Rosh Chodesh, the new moon, appears. It's renewed, there's a renewal. Likewise, women will experience in the next world renewal, which seems to indicate men do not. Men do not experience renewal in the next world. Now, what does that mean? These are mystical things which is not for us to get involved in. But one thing that we do have a right, we do have permission to acknowledge is, one second, is there a problem with, are there no cups? There are no cups?
No cups.
Hey, give me one moment, please. Okay, half a second.
Is there milk?
I brought a little of my own.
I don't drink black coffee.
Me either.
I don't enjoy black coffee.
I'm prepared.
The hair pops.
Shkaya, thank you.
Okay, sorry. All right, so what does it mean over here? That what we were saying over here, that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave them reward in this world. Okay, Schar Be'olam Hazeh. Now, what is this all about? Okay, so why did they get reward? What is the reward about? So the Midrash goes on. Basically, the popular idea that's expressed in different midrashim is that the time of the Chet Egel, at the time when the Egel was being made, when Moshe Rabbeinu delayed coming down from the mountain, the men needed gold to make the eagle, and they asked for donations. And who had gold? Women, jewelry. And the women were asked to give jewelry, gold, for the eagle. They refused. They refused to give gold for the eagle. In other words, they objected. They objected, they recognized the false, that it was false, this approach to replacing Moshe Rabbeinu with an Egel Hazav was incorrect. They objected, and they expressed their objection by not giving their jewelry for the Egel. And the Farshim say it's a lot more than just that, because one can say very simply, the reason why they objected It's not because they objected to the making of the egel. They objected because they did not want to part with their jewelry. Yeah, it's a very good cause. There are a lot of very good causes in this world. There are people starving all over the world. There are people there that you can go open up a newspaper. You can find only 1,000 chesed organizations to donate. I'm not giving up my life savings to any of them. So just because they refused to give their jewelry, why does it indicate that they objected to the chet or egel to the degree where they are deserving of reward? It's not fair. Men don't wear jewelry. Men are not so interested in wearing jewelry. So the men gave whatever they gave. They had some gold. They took off their watch, whatever they gave. But the women, it meant their jewelry meant something very much to them. They refused to give. Why is that noble? How did that indicate that they objected to the worshipping of the eagle? So there's another part to this, which is very critical to appreciate. And that is when they came later to build the Mishkan, the Pasuk says, Vayovohu ho'anoshim al hanoshim. Who were the first ones to give money to build the Mishkan? The women. The women took off their jewelry and they delivered all of their jewelry to the Beis HaMikdash in their excitement, in their belief, is an expression of their commitment to Hashem to build the Mishkan. That was the clinch. This is a very powerful idea. It's not my idea, of course, but this is cited over here by many Mefarshim. When we talk about Rosh Chodesh, we talk about that it's the Yom Tov of Nashim. You'll ask the average person, they'll tell you, you know why it's the Yom Tov of the Nashim? It's because the women did not want to give jewelry. They did not want to give jewelry for the Egel. And as a reward, Hashem gave them a holiday that's designated for them. Who says they didn't give the jewelry because they didn't believe in the Egel? Maybe they believed in the Egel. They just didn't want to give the jewelry. The proof came when it came to build the Mishkan and they gave their jewelry. So it shows they were willing to part with their jewelry for a cause that's emes. For Hashem, they gave. For the Egel, they did not give. It's this combination of two events that shows where these women, where they are holding in their dedication to Hashem. So when we look at Rosh Chodesh, it's not just that the women did not give to the Egel. It's that the women gave for the Mishkan.
What's the Rosh Chodesh connection?
Okay, so when it comes to why specifically, because you're asking very good, when it comes to that one moment, you're asking very good. Well, let's go one thing at a point. I just want to point something very interesting. I find Mayor Appeldorf, he knows that I'm very bored, I have nothing to do the whole day, so he gave me a book. Mayor, you there? He gave me the book, Esther Hamalka. What is referring to? Rebbetzin Esther Jungreis. Rebbetzin Esther Jungreis, she passed away about 3-4 years ago, something like that. So she created an institution called Hineni, and about a couple of years, about a year after she passed away, Nachum Seltzer, one of the best writers today in the Jewish world, he was hired to write a book, to research her life, to study her life, and to conduct all of the numerous interviews and put together all the information presented to produce a fantastic volume. And probably the best story in the whole book, which I didn't read the whole book, only read a small portion, but when I read the reviews of the book, this is the only thing that everyone cites, everyone talks about this story, is that when she wanted to go forward with her organization, her institution, it was Shlomo Kalbach's idea that she should have an event in a Madison Square Garden. I don't remember all the names, but she approached a very wealthy donor. It was almost impossible to get an appointment with him. And finally, she was able to meet with him, and she comes to him, she sits down by the dining room table, and this wealthy person's wife was sitting there as well, and she presented her plan, and she wanted from him, you know, a sizable donation. I think even just to be a co-signer, to be a guarantor. that in case it was a flop, he'll pay the bills, just in case. And she presented with passion her idea of Hineni, what she planned to do. And he basically said, it's very, very nice, but, you know, I'm sorry, I'll give you an $18 check. I'm sorry, I'm not going to be your backer for this. This fellow, this wealthy philanthropist's wife was sitting right there, and she was taken by Rebbetzin Esther Jungreis. She was blown away with her and what she had to say, and she says to her husband, after he told her no, if you don't help her, I'm going to take all of my jewelry to a pawn shop and trade it in and give her every penny that I have to help her establish this organization. It's remarkable. That woman, I'm embarrassed, I don't know what her name is, that woman, Mamush, was a Gilgal, if you can say such a word. She was a reincarnation of what it says by the Mishkan, Vayavohu ho'anoshim al hanoshim. The women took the lead. The women said, yes, here's all of our jewelry. And when the men saw how committed the women were to the cause, then the men followed. Okay, we're also in. The women took the lead. It inspired the men, and the men followed. That's, to a degree, the primary uniqueness, not the fact that they did not give to the Egel. It was a revelation. There's two sides of one coin. Each one by itself, you can maybe say, maybe you can, let's ask a question. What's the nobility of the women taking off their jewelry and donating it for the building of the Mishkan? Maybe the women didn't like their jewelry. They wanted an upgrade. Here, I don't like these earrings. I've been wearing these earrings and this nose ring and this necklace for the last 20 years. It's time for you, my husband, to buy me something new. So let's get rid of the old. So hey, give it to the Mishkan. So the women, so they gave a donation, big deal. Who says the donation to the Mishkan was sincere? Maybe there was an ulterior motive. If that was true, why didn't they give their jewelry for the Egel? And if you'll tell me the reason why they did not give the jewelry for the Egel was because they just didn't, they liked it too much. They enjoyed having these objects, these possessions. And it's not because they did not believe in the Egel. Why then did they give for the Mishkan? Each part represents two sides of one coin. And it's together, these two elements together is where the women showed more than the men. They gave the jewelry for the Mishkan first and inspired the men, and they refused to participate in the chait of the Egel, to be a kofui toif to Hashem, to abandon Hashem and replace Hashem with a golden calf. These are two separate elements, refusal and giving. What is that? In other words, there are times when you give and there are times when you hold back. What is the moon all about? The moon expands and contracts, at least from our perspective. The light of the moon, there's a time when the moon gets larger. The first 15 days of the month, the moon is expanding. And the second 15 days of the month, the moon contracts. The women have shown there's a time to give and there's a time to withhold. That is balance. No, it's not balance. It's control. A person who's not in control, there are people who are addicted to giving. People that are very generous. This is a very common thing. There are people that are very wealthy, and they give. And they give, and they give, and they give. And sometimes it's an addiction. It's not even a normal giving. I remember there was a fellow in my father's shul who gave very generously to the shul, and maybe to my father also. And then one day he got a call from this person's wife, telling him, "Don't cash the checks. Whenever he gives, he has really nothing to give. He's not well. It's a sickness. There's a sickness. He has this inner nobility of giving, but there's something wrong. He has an illness that he can't control himself. He wants to give. He doesn't have what to give. He makes believe he has what to give for whatever his gives him that high, that excitement. But it's not right. There's a time to give and there's a time not to give. When a person knows how to give at the right time, to the right people, the right amount, and knows when not to give, and the time he's not supposed to give, what he's not supposed to do, this is an expression of control. That is nobility. The moon is a reminder to us. There's a time to expand, and there's a time to contract. In business, sometimes you have to invest in infrastructure, in technology, in creating a new product, in hiring new people. And then there's a time you have to lay off people. You have to make tough decisions. The business is not doing well. If we don't lay off people, if we don't cut our losses, then there will be nothing left at the end of the day. This control. The moon is a very well-balanced part of creation from our perspective. I know we all know that, you know, that the way the world works from outside is obviously very different, but in halacha, more often than not, Chazal enjoy working with the principle that the earth is the center of the world and the sun rotates around the earth. Not because they're ignorant of the reality, it's because perspective is something that is very real. And from our perspective, we're here in the morning and we see the sunrise in the east and the sunset in the west. That is a tool for us how to relate to the world. When we look at the moon, we see the moon the first 15 days, it expands. The last 15 days, it contracts. The moon has a healthy balance. Noshim in Jewish history have always been the ones who have that ability to know when to do and when not to do. Men, more often than not, go to an extreme. They lose their balance. Shlomo HaMelech, it's a very good thing to get married. People will tell you that marriage is nothing like getting married. Shlomo HaMelech, he believed in getting married to such a degree, he married 1,000 women. 1,000 wives. Problem is, the Torah told him only 18, not 1,000 wives. You have exceeded your bounds. Torah says, don't have too many horses. Nope. Too much. Don't have too much money. Too much. Okay. There are dangers, and to be mitzamsem, to hold back, not to give, to be a miser, or not to get married. What someone just mentioned before, Yeshai said to Chizkiyahu, you're going to die because you are holding back. Men have a problem of not being able to find balance, being able to have that sweet spot. A happy medium. Here, Rabbi Nachum is giving me the good words here. He teaches me some good vocabulary. A happy medium. Men have a problem. Women have a nobility. One of the midos that Noshim have more than men is the ability of a happy medium. When, yes, there's a certain koyach they have. This is something that they don't talk about, this type of idea. We talk about Noshim, they'll typically go talk to a secular psychologist. So they'll tell you right off the bat, men are from Mars, women are from Venus, a woman can multitask. A man cannot walk and chew gum at the same time. A man has to concentrate on walking. When he's chewing gum, he has to concentrate on chewing gum. Woman can be doing the laundry, can be taking care of the children, doing homework with another child, running a business, making supper, and running the world all at the same time. A woman has that ability to multitask. Men don't have that ability. Men have to focus on one thing at a time. There's an advantage, because the secular psychologists don't have time on me, will tell you that because man does not have the ability to multitask, man does have the ability, when he does focus on one task, to generally be able to delve into one task deeper than a woman would ordinarily do. Because a woman is distracted with the many things that are going on at the same time, which she very skillfully can handle, that a man can. So everyone has their milas. And this is just general. Yechidim, of course, there are individuals that are totally different. That's the common difference between man and woman that you'll hear about in all the secular psychology. And you want to go talk in halacha, they're all different ideas. But this is a different idea. This is a different idea that you don't hear about much often, and that is the idea of balance. A woman has a much better sense of balance of when to give, when to withhold. A man has a lot of trouble with that. A man who is in the mode of giving, it's hard for him to stop giving. A man who is in the mode of being stingy has difficulty giving. They don't have that happy medium, that balance. The Levana is the mashal, the dogma of Noshim. It expands and contracts with consistency and perfection. That's a mashal for a Naisha. When Chazal wanted to express why is Rosh Chodesh the Yom Tov of Noshim, where do we find an Isha having that proper balance? Look at the Mishkan. Look at the eagle. It's the same piece of jewelry. The same piece of jewelry they did not give for the eagle, they gave for the Mishkan. Building of the Mishkan, by the way, was a kapara for the eagle. The eagle, Hashem says, that was the point of the Ramban, many of the Mefarshim, when the whole construction of the Mishkan was an atonement for the Cheto Egel. Isn't it amazing that the Mishkan was built with the donations of the Noshim? It wasn't just they gave a donation. It's the same donation they refused to give to the Cheto Egel, to the Egel. That is what we're going to go do to rebuild, build the Mishkan. And the men followed in their lead. And that very much connects to the whole principle of the Levana. So if someone hears the question, if anyone hears the question, why then, maybe it was Rabbi Naiman, why then does this apply to Rosh Chodesh, the beginning of the month? Well, so simply you can say, on a very simple level, is that the Rosh Chodesh is the Levana. It's the moon. So the moon has this midah, so the beginning of the moon, so it's all about the moon. But on a more precise level, Rosh Chodesh is when the moon gives. When the moon begins to show its light, it opens up its hand to give. Noshim did not give for the Egel, but now they gave for the Mishkan. When they gave, when they began to open up and give, it was a revelation that this that they did not give for the Egel was not because they didn't believe in the Egel. Not because they just didn't want to part with their money. It's because they didn't believe in it. They knew that it was cool as shaker. Okay, so this is one idea as to explain the connection between women and the Levana. Okay, there are other ideas which are there are some very simple ideas. That a woman relates to the Levana because a woman has a cycle. A woman is a Nida, the Nida cycle. All the laws of Nida very much are very similar, even in time. Okay, it's not exactly the same number of days and so on and so forth, but there's a remarkable similarity between the body, the biology of a woman, where a woman renews herself every 30 days, and all of the associated laws of Hilchos Nida. And that very much relates to the Levana. The Levana also is renewing itself every 30 days. So that also is another form of connection to Nashim. Now, another very simple idea, which is really, 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 very basic. Let's take a bracha. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech olam shehakol nehiyah bidvarayu. I'm not fasting today, Rabbi Yisai. I know I'm sorry. I know probably most of you are holy Jews here. Yom Kippur Katan. But I can't. I need my coffee. Sorry. But another very simple idea relating to the Noshman and the Levana, and this is like super elementary, is that a man, even in the symbols, in the international symbols of male and female, a man is a noisein, a giver, and a woman is a mekabel. In the reproductive organs, man is the noisein, and the isha is the mekabel, the one who accepts. And the relationship between the sun and the moon is the relationship of giving and taking. The sun produces its own light, and the light that we see when we look at the moon at night is nothing more than a reflection of the light of the sun. The light of the moon is, it's a Kabbalah. The moon has accepted the rays of the sun have been cast upon the moon. They have been absorbed into the moon, whatever that all means. And that's why we're able from Earth to look up and see the moon as a mekabel. The sun is the noisein. The levana is the mekabel. That is a dogma. That is an example for all different examples of giving and receiving. A man is the noisein, the isha is the mekabel. So the isha relates to the moon more than the man relates to the moon. And the sun and the moon, likewise, is a mashal between Klal Yisrael and Knesset Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Knesset Yisrael. Hashem is the noisein, we are the mekabel, and so on and so forth. Everything in this world where there's a giver and a taker, a receiver, taker is not a nice word, but a receiver, is all hinted to in the relationship between the sun and the moon. And being that the Isha in her role in physical, even physically, is a makabel, and in hashkafa, it's a very controversial thing, obviously, in the modern world to say that a woman is a makabel when the woman makes the parnasa and the woman controls the world. But generally in the world in the Torah hashkafa, a woman is in the category of the mekabel, and thus she relates very much to the principles of the levana, which is in essence a mekabel. Okay, so these are some basic ideas of how we connect a woman to the levana. We've given three ideas. We've given the idea of balance. We've given, and that relates directly to the Mishkan and the Egel. We've given the idea of a woman and her Nida cycle as it relates to the moon. And we've given the idea of the Levana representing the Mekabel. Now let's go forward. Now how does this connection that a woman has to the Levana manifest itself? Where do we find women in celebrating the Yom Tov more than men? So it's cited in many sources, many, many, many places. You think even Shulchan Aruch, not sure to what degree it says this, is that women had a custom from time memorial not to do labor on Rosh Chodesh. Women do not work on Rosh Chodesh. Now, let's not confuse this with Hanukkah. Chanukah, we learned not that long ago, there's a custom that Noshim do not work on Chanukah. When? Only when the Chanukah candles are lit. Some say that's not even that's not true. Only for the first half an hour. From the time they light candles, for the next half an hour, they don't engage in melacha. What is melacha? We'll come back to that in one moment. But when it comes to Rosh Chodesh, it appears there's no such distinction of not women not doing melacha only for half an hour or for a short period of time. But women who observe this minhag, if there are any left today, who observe this minhag, that do not do melacha, do not do melacha the entire day. It's not, oh, I'll just, you know, a token fulfillment of this custom, I won't do melacha for half an hour. No, there's no such thing. It's the entire day they do not engage in melacha. Now, what exactly does that mean, the entire day? We'll come back to that in one moment. Let's first define what is called melacha. So there are different customs to say that a woman, basically what it comes down to is the minhag of Yerushalayim. I think it's still prevalent today in the Yerushalayim. There are two things that she does not do. They do not wash clothing, laundry, and they do not sew. Sewing, laundry, and knitting. Okay, women knitting blankets. This is a pastime of many Noshim. I don't know today if many women are still involved in knitting different.
I don't know. Yehuda in the Sefer Hasidim says about taking haircuts also.
Well, that's for men also. That's a minhag for men. That's a general Yom Tov halacha. That's not miyuchad for women. But let's talk about something that is very specific to women. There's a Yehuda Chos that says you should not take a haircut and you should not cut your nails on Rosh Chodesh. That's for everyone across the board. But let's discuss something that is unique to women. The custom from ancient times, time immemorial, and I think it's still the minhag in Yerushalayim HaKodesh, is that women do not do laundry, women do not sew, and they do not knit. However, ironing is permitted. Ironing was never prohibited. Now we do ironing today with you plug into the wall. In the ancient times they did they press clothing in a much more
mechanical
and more primitive way, pressing clothing. We call that today gihutz, and that is permitted. Now why are these specific malachas? Why these malachas are they forbidden? I'm not exactly sure why these three of fashioning and cleaning clothing. It has something to do with clothing. To make clothing, when you sew, you're putting together pieces of material to produce a garment. When you knit, you actually are creating the garment. And when you clean clothing, that means the clothing are soiled, they're not wearable until you cleanse them. It has something to do with clothing. You want to say that it relates to the Chet Eitz Hadas, Vayu, they were Erumim, Adam and Chava were without clothing, and because she ate from the Eitz Hadas, and that caused awareness that they were not wearing clothing, and they had to go cover themselves, and that event took place on Rosh Chodesh. In fact, it took place on the ultimate Rosh Chodesh. It took place the sixth day of creation, before Shabbos. It took place on the day that Adam was created. So do we want to say that maybe, could very well be that there's some relationship? Okay, but let's not go there for now. But right now, let's just focus for the moment on the technical laws without getting into the reason of this particular halacha. But there is a minhag from time immemorial that women do not do labor on Rosh Chodesh, including these three specific things.
If there isn't a woman around, it's a man, is it? Are they prohibited from doing this?
Men are allowed to do laundry, of course. This is unique to women. Men are allowed to wash the clothing with their bare hands and a machine. There is no prohibition whatsoever for a man to do melacha on Rosh Chodesh. They do everything they do during the week. And the fact is, if someone has such a minhag not to melacha, most, not all, but most posts can hold that it's a minhag shtus. There's absolutely no source, and he should abolish that minhag. He can do malacha, he can sew, he can do laundry, he can knit, do whatever he wants. He does not need to be mater neder. There is absolutely no source for a man to limit himself from doing labor on Rosh Chodesh. This is unique to Noshim only. Noshim have a minhag from time immemorial. Some say it goes back to the time of the Nevi'im, the prophets. Women did not do melacha on Rosh Chodesh, because Rosh Chodesh is a Yom Tov L'Nashim. And the Malacha is defined by three specific Malachas: cleaning clothing, sewing clothing, and making clothing for the very first time, which we call knitting. It has something to do with fashion, the fashioning of garments. Now let's discuss some basic halacha. Number one, does this apply to both days Rosh Chodesh? Or maybe it only should apply to the second. Let's say you have two days Rosh Chodesh. Tomorrow is Shvat. Tomorrow is only one day. Shvat only has one day Rosh Chodesh because this month Teves is Chaser. It's only 29 days. So what would be day 30 becomes day 1. But let's say we have a Chodesh that has two day Rosh Chodesh, where the month is supposed going to be 30 days. So we observe Rosh Chodesh on day 30 and on day 31. Which is the real Rosh Chodesh? The real Rosh Chodesh is the second day. So there are many, many poskim that are very lenient. The Mishnah Berurah cites the difference of opinion, and he says that the Noshim that have the Minug only have to observe the second day Rosh Chodesh, not the first day. It's only a Minug, it's not Ikar Hadin, and the first day Rosh Chodesh is not really Rosh Chodesh. It's only because because the minhag of Asinu B'Yodeinu, we're following the tradition that to observe 2 days Rosh Chodesh, because we would be Mekadesh al pi Re'iyah, the witnesses, the messengers would not reach us until it would be too late. So we're Machna, we have 2 days Rosh Chodesh, but being that today we know what the calendar is, and we're not Mekadesh al pi Re'iyah, women only have to observe the minhag on the real Rosh Chodesh, which is the second day. The Mishnah Berurah cites this opinion, and he says there are two, but some say no. Some say that the tradition is both days, and women should not engage in these three activities, both days Rosh Chodesh. Next question, what about at night? Are women allowed to do the laundry at night, sew at night, and knit at night? Even if does that include the prohibition? So there's also a difference of opinion, and many hold they can be lenient and they can do milacha at night, because the nighttime of Rosh Chodesh is much less severe than the daytime of Rosh Chodesh, as we discussed yesterday in detail. For example, if you forget to recite Yale the Yavoi in Shmoyne Esrei on Rosh Chodesh at night, you do not repeat the Shmoyne Esrei, because Beis Din was not Mekadesh the Levana at night. Sanctifying the new moon was an act of a court, and the court does not sit in session in the evening. They only issue decrees and issue Piskei Halacha. They only engage in official court business by day. At night, they are certainly working overtime to deal with all of the issues and to delve into what will be the decision, but the actual execution of the law and the decisions are only handed down by day, not at night. Thus, if you forget the Yalav Yalav, you do not need to repeat the Shemona Esrei. As an extension of that, many poskim suggest that even the Noshim who have a custom not to engage in these three labors can do these activities in the evening, because it's not the same degree of severity. So really, we're coming to limit the halacha very much. Noshim only need to be careful on the second day Rosh Chodesh, by day, not to do these three things: cleaning clothing, sewing clothing, and knitting new garments. Now here comes the big question, the $6 million question, which every person will ask. What about today? Today we have ultra-high-tech washing machines and dryers and, you know, all this technology. You're not allowed to go put clothing into a box and press a button? When Chazal said that Noshim cannot engage in the labor of washing clothing, we're talking ancient times. It was torture. You have to go take the clothing, soak it in a pail. You have to first go out to the well and break your back to go and draw water into a bucket, and then carry the bucket home, break your back carrying it all the way home, and then take your clothing and soak your clothing in this pail and squeeze it, and who knows what you have to do in order to get the clothing clean. That's hard, crushing labor. Avodas perach. To do laundry with your bare hands. and then you have to go to the backyard and put up those strings and those pulleys and display all of your undergarments for the whole world to see, especially for Google Earth. Google Earth can look down and everyone can see your underwear. Right? Soon it'll be live Google Earth. Everyone can see this is Bezionis. Okay, so this it's not good for Shidduchim. That's the type of underwear you have. That's it. I cannot do Shidduch with this family. Right? This is Bezionis. It's crushing labor and it's Bezionis. I'm not just joking around, you know what I'm saying. But the point over here is Bizman Hazeh, it's not like that. Bizman Hazeh, it's not fun to do laundry. I can't imagine anyone having great pleasure doing laundry, but it's not considered today to be avodas perach. You depress a few buttons.
It's solution is for the man to do the laundry.
That's right, that's posh. But the question over here is, are Noshim allowed Bizman Hazeh to engage in cleaning clothing through our modern technology?
If you say Shalia Shaladim Kamaisa, she's doing it for her husband.
No, it doesn't go like that. Not in this case.
Bikuach Nefesh. Otherwise, he'll beat her up.
Okay, Bikuach Nefesh, that's a different story. But let's discuss ordinary circumstances. So what is halacha? Like everything else in life, machlaikas. The ninik is to have machlaikas. Like everything else in life, there's a disagreement, a dispute among the poskim. What is the status of a modern-day washing machine? Basically, technically, it's mutter, because many people will suggest the reason why Noshim may not do melacha on Rosh Chodesh is to show that it's a yomtiv. So that means don't engage in activities that are distracting. You have to be distracted. When you would wash clothing by hand, it's a distracting activity. You're fully involved in what you're doing. It's hard work. Your mind is focused on what you're doing. You don't have time to think about anything else. Today, most women, when they're putting the laundry into the machine, they're on the phone. They're talking on the phone while they're putting the laundry into the machine. They don't seem too distracted. They're able to have a conversation, right? I bet you, if you do the statistics, you'll find that 95% of women, when they're putting the laundry into the machine, they're on the phone at the same time. So obviously, they're not too distracted when they're doing this malacha. They're not too distracted. It does not take away from the day. It's a holy day. On a holy day, you have to think about the Kedusha Sayoim. I'm not distracted if I do laundry with a modern day washing machine. So therefore, gezunt eid, go do it. What about sewing? I don't know. I don't really see this. Bizman is sewing this with a sewing machine. Doesn't seem that I never saw anyone that tries to say no. Sewing, you're also not distracted. I never saw anyone that says that. Sewing still seems to be forbidden, even with a sewing machine. Doesn't seem that using a machine to sew is any less involved than sewing by hand. I would imagine sewing with a machine is even more complicated because you got to really pay attention to what you're doing. It's happening so fast. When you're sewing by hand, you know, you're much more, it's much more leisurely. I don't know, maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. But sewing, I don't see anywhere that says that a woman today, those who do have this custom, not do malacha, are allowed to sew with a machine. No, if you do have the custom that you're not allowed to sew with a machine, and you're not allowed to sew by hand. And when it comes to knitting, same thing. There's no such thing as knitting by a machine. I don't know, maybe there is, but basically there's no such thing. Knitting and sewing is off limits. The dilemma that is presented is regarding women who do have a tradition in their family that on Rosh Chodesh they should not wash clothing. Today, are they allowed to wash clothing in a washing machine? And many poskim will say yes, because it's not very distracting. But on the other hand, if you want to take the Kabbalistic approach is to look at the three malachas which traditionally are forbidden. They all involve clothing. There's something about clothing that's off limits. It's not even so much the distraction. It's about engaging in the preparation of clothing. Rosh Chodesh is not a day an Isha wants to get involved in clothing. I told you a little snippet. Maybe it's related to the very first Rosh Chodesh that a woman came in, was in this world. On the very first Rosh Chodesh that this woman was in this world, Chava, it was Rosh Chodesh Tishrei. And what did she do? She gave Adam tea from the Eitz Hadas and brought into his mind the Yetzer Hara, which required that men and women wear clothing. So maybe it's not so much a matter of distraction, it's a matter of a zecher for the chet Eitz Hadas. And the Isha was a participant, a very active participant in this Avera, and she doesn't want to get involved. Therefore, it's her yomtif. And you know what a yomtif is? Don't remind me of chet. See, it's a very spiritual type of yomtif. Person like me, you think about a yomtif, you think about, oh, yomtif, I'm not going to get involved in like, you know, enjoy yourself, have fun. But a spiritual person, they're tormented every day because of their sins. If I'm Reuven, where was Reuven by the Mechira of Yosef? Reuven was doing teshuva because he was mebalbel the mita of his father. Have no better time to go to teshuva, than now, this critical moment, when they're selling your brother? Obviously, people are very disturbed that they did averos. So you know what a yomtiv is? I don't want to think about my averos. If you're a very holy spiritual person, a yomtiv is to put aside your averos. Let's focus only on mitzvahs. For a mundane person, a yomtiv is party. Let's have a party. Let's go out and celebrate something. A holy person, Klal Yisrael is a Am Kodosh. Noshim, it bothers them. It bothers their psyche that deep down in there, they were responsible for the Eitz Hadas, which brought Klala to this world, which is manifested in the fact that man and woman have a Yetzirah and they need to wear clothing. So therefore, it's a Yomtif L'Noshim. You know what that means for Noshim? I don't want to think about my Averos. I don't want to think about Averos. So therefore, I don't want to look at a garment. I don't want to look at a garment today. Don't get me involved in garments, because that's a reminder of my Averos. If that's the pshat, then don't wash out clothing with a washing machine. But that's a more Kabbalistic approach. And you gotta be practical. If you have 12 children and they need and they have nothing what to wear, and you're gonna go to the rabbi, and the rabbi is gonna tell you, you know, maybe you should be a mystic, a mekubal. It's not going to be good for the marriage to become a mekubal when you have 12 children of nothing what to wear. This point in your life, be practical. Be like a litvak. You shuckle, and you follow the halacha, and it says in halacha, washing machine is not a distraction, so go wash the clothing in the washing machine in Rosh Chodesh, you're good to go. Shalom al Yisrael. So these are the basic customs of Nashim. Three different prohibitions, three different customs going back from time immemorial, and the modern shayla of a washing machine, does it really make a difference? Depending on, is it an issue of clothing, more a Kabbalistic approach, or is it a more practical approach of distraction? It's not a distraction. Does it apply to the 2 days of Rosh Chodesh, only one day? Some say both days, some say only the second day. Does it apply at night? Some say yes, but most say not, because at nighttime it's not so severe, it's only a minhag, and therefore you can severely limit the minhag to a very bare minimum, bizman hazeh. Most women today are not very involved in sewing clothing. And by another exception, if it's your parnasa, if you're a seamstress, if this is your parnasa, there's nothing to talk about, you're allowed to do it. Davar ha'ovet, it's no worse than chol ha'moed. If it's a davar ha'ovet, if you're not going to wash clothing, and you're not going to sew and knit, it's going to cause you a loss of money. Everyone agrees you're allowed to do these things. It's like a davar ha'aveit. A davar ha'aveit is permitted on chol ha'moed. So there's no reason when the Rosh Chodesh is certainly not more chomer than chol ha'moed. So the Nashim are allowed to do these things on Rosh Chodesh if they would lose income. If this is what their job is, this is talking about where it's not their job. And if they really want, they can do it the day before or the day after. It's not a pressing emergency. Question is, can I take advantage of the time that I have available to do it right now? So there are minhagim. These are the minhagim. Do all women today have this minhag? It seems like not. It seems that somehow, for some reason, because of galus, many women have forgotten about this custom. I don't know. You have to ask your wives, ask your grandparents, ask, you know, you have to do some research if they really observed. In America, it doesn't seem that too many noshim are very, they think about this. They go about their routine, they want to wash clothing, they don't think about this. They're not familiar with this tradition that women in ancient times had a custom to celebrate the festival in a unique way by not engaging in these activities. These activities are not, they're not major activities today for most women. So, you know, whatever, it just somehow it got forgotten about. To the degree where if a woman wants to do laundry, do you have a tradition in your family not to do laundry on Rosh Chodesh? Never heard of it. I never heard of this before. A woman comes to a rabbi, she listens to a shir, or my friend, on Torah anytime, and they talk about Rosh Chodesh, and it says there that Nashim on Rosh Chodesh, they're not allowed to do laundry. And they come to the rabbi. Rabbi, really? I never heard of this. I went to Beis Yaakov, went to seminary. I'm married to a big Rosh Hashiva. I yes, my husband. My husband says, go ask your rabbi. I don't know. So here I am. I'm asking you, what should I do? And the rabbi says, you never heard of it before? Did your mother ever tell you this? When you're in your home, you remember your mother? No. You ever remember your grandmother not doing? No. So do laundry. If you don't have this tradition, you never heard of it before, you're allowed to do whatever. Some noshim, they do have a tradition. The Bach over here is something very, very fascinating. The Bach basically says that Rosh Chodesh is a yomtiv. You don't mess around with women. And he illustrates this with an incredible halacha. He says like this, this is the Bach. The Bach says, there's a halacha. Now, this is not going to go off well in marriage counseling classes, I'm going to tell you, and in the magazines. But in Shulchan Aruch, there is such a halacha, which, I don't know, maybe it has been censored, I'm not sure, that there are certain things a husband can force his wife to do. Okay, there are certain things in marriage, you're married, and there's a certain expectation, a partnership, married, wife-ish. I don't even know, I'm not even sure of the exact details. I don't know what it includes exactly, of preparing food. There are certain minimal things that there is an expectation that a wife does for her husband. And it's listed in detail in Shulchan Aruch. And if the wife decides she's on strike, she's not doing these things, it's a problem. And if they would go to a Bezdin can say to the wife, either you do it, this is part of your duties as a wife to your husband, or there are consequences. Okay, use your imagination, whatever the consequences are. Whatever they are, it's not relevant. But there is such a principle that a husband at times has power to demand certain things that are normal, expected in marriage, the wife does for the husband. The Bach says that on Rosh Chodesh, a husband has no power. It's a day off. It's a day off for the wife. The wife doesn't have to do anything for the husband. It's a day off. He cannot force her. Even the things that ordinarily, al-pi the halacha in Shulchan Aruch, that he's entitled to, not on Rosh Chodesh, it's her day off from you, from the husband. Unbelievable, huh? And then it says, and on the other hand, there's another incredible chiddush, is that let's say the husband comes from a family of generations where they have this sacred tradition that the wives, the women, do not do melacha, they do not wash clothing on Rosh Chodesh. And his wife, he married a woman, they never heard of this before. And his wife's family, they do wash clothing on Rosh Chodesh. But the husband says, I want you, my wife, to be like my mother. I want you not to do, I want to be from those people. I can go brag in shul that my wife, she's very religious, she doesn't do melacha on Rosh Chodesh. So the Bach says, no, if she wants to do melacha, she can do melacha. You have no power to tell her not to do melacha. So what comes out from the Bach is, on Rosh Chodesh, you can't tell your wife what to do and what not to do. Unbelievable. When it comes to the minog, there is a minog in Yisrael. You can't deny that it's a real minog in Yisrael not to do melacha, not to wash clothing on Rosh Chodesh. But if a woman says to her husband, I want to wash clothing, Get lost. I don't care. I don't care. I, even if she wants to break the minhag, I believe that she can change her minhag, because since many people don't have this minhag, she has a right, the Bach seems to say this, she can break the minhag. I want to do melacha, wash the clothing on Rosh Chodesh. Don't tell me what I not to do something. The Bach Paskin, she wins. It's her yomtiv. She can decide for herself. On the other hand, so you can't tell your wife not to do something. Let's say the wife is not making dinner. So you say, you know, dinner, Rosh Chodesh. Now, I think it's even food. I think the Bach, I have it over here. Let me see if I can find it right now. Exact words. Here it is. I got it. Let me read you. Let's see. Instead of making up things, let's read what it says. Minabdivya Bach, Yesh Tzad Kula Vitzad Chumra. Lukula. Shemedina Noshim Mutaros Lasois Vresh Chodesh Kola Malachis. Do whatever they want. They can do whatever they want. You can't force them. Ula Chumra. She'en Habal Rashai. Lachoif es ishoy afilu limalocha kala. You cannot force your wife to do on Rosh, even a malocha kala, a lightweight malocha, which I think he refers to even cooking, baking. That's perfectly permissible. I mean, there's never restriction on that. But and she has a duty to do these things. No, Rosh Chodesh is her day off. Incredible insight. Talk about, you know, a woman's role in the modern Orthodoxy, even in Haredi Orthodoxy, the role of a woman today is very different than it ever was across the entire spectrum. Very, very different. And what the Bach says is like very cutting edge, that there's a day in the month where the woman can say to the husband, get lost. I'll do whatever I want. You can't tell me what to do, what not to do. But the rest of the month doesn't work like that. The rest of the month is this pretty serious stuff. A woman generally has to follow the minhagim of her husband, generally. Okay, not every single thing, but generally that's part of marriage. A Jewish Orthodox marriage, generally the woman follows the minhagim of her husband. Generally, and then if the husband and as far as obligations, you're in a marriage. A marriage is a two-way street. The husband has obligations to his wife, and the wife has obligations to her husband. This is not leave me alone. There are rules. The Bach, tremendous chiddush. He notes over here that this Bach is controversial. Obviously so, but not to us, only us. I mean, the other poiskim of his contemporaries found this a little bit disturbing. What the Bach writes, and he writes over here, Ochein, Nikola poiskim, loimashma kedas habach l'chumra. V'sviru, habach l'kula. Okay, he goes on to explain, you know, to finesse this. If she doesn't want to make supper, that could be a problem. If he says to her, you know, if the minug in your family, in our family, is not doing malacha, you're not doing malacha, you're not going to go wash the clothing out in public, everyone should see, and they're going to tell me, what kind of rabbi are you? You preach in shul that the women shouldn't do malacha, and your own wife is doing malacha, she's washing the clothing. So it starts with, he notes over here that what the Bach says, the Bach goes to a little bit of an extreme in what he says. He notes a little bit controversial, but one thing it does for sure, at least do for us, is that it brings out an incredible insight, is that, wow, Rosh Chodesh is their day. It's their day. They have independence. It's a Yom Tov Lenoshim. They have special status. Now this, let's just go back a little bit to the Midrashim that we started with before. We started before is why indeed is Rosh Chodesh a Yom Tov Lenoshim. So we gave three reasons. Let's elaborate a little bit more. There's another Midrash. And the Midrash, I believe, says that we know that there are Shalosh Regalim, Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. And the Midrash says Pesach was given to Klal Yisrael the merit of whom? Of Avraham. Lushi V'asi Ugois. The Yom Tov of Shavuos was given to us in the merit of Yitzchak. Why why is Shavuos? I forgot. I don't remember why. Why Yitzchak? He says over the Medrash exactly why Yitzchak. Yitzchak is Shavuos, and Yaakov is obvious. Ulemekneu asa sukkos. Yaakov built sukkos. What about the Yud Beis, the 12 months of the year? They were given to Klal Yisrael in the merit of the Yud Beis Shvatim, the 12 tribes. Each of the Shvatim, and in fact, there's a lot of beautiful Torah on this. This is the Bnei Yisachar. Bnei Yisachar's whole Sefer is built upon this principle that each of the 12 months corresponds to a Shevet. Each month, and there are different orders of how you order the Shvatim. What is each month? Who does it correspond to? I don't even know who Shvat. I forgot who Shvat corresponds to. Each month corresponds to a Shevet. So the Medrash goes on and says, so what happened? They worshipped the Egel. So it was meant to be that there was going to be Moadim, the Shalosh Regalim, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and the 12 Rosh Chodashim is going to be in honor of the Yud Beis Shvatim, Moadim. But then when they worshipped the Egel, it was taken away from the Shvatim. Who was it given to? So the Medrash says it was given to their wives. Now the question is, who were these wives? Do we even know the name of one of the wives of one of the Yud Beis Shvatim? I'm not aware of. Did anyone ever hear of the names? Who was Mrs. Reuven? Who was Mrs. Shimon? Oh, so that maybe that's the only one. That's the only one. But okay. All right. So who was Reuven? Dina. So do we even know who they were? Okay, and Hanami, if we find who they were, it'll be very interesting.
Well, the Gemara asked the question from the Shivim Nefesh. You mean it doesn't list any of the wives? So the Gemara speculates maybe they all died before they went down to Mitzrayim, but finds it hard to believe. But
it's very hard. Ishtai Kegufai.
It's a whole story.
Ishtai Kegufai. What's going on? Yeah. It's very bizarre. It was given to these mysterious women. Isn't that interesting? So over here, this one says in the Medrash, it was given to the Noshim, the wives. Isn't that very mysterious that when we celebrate Rosh Chodesh, when the Noshim, they are commemorating a festival that we don't even know who the woman is. Like you mentioned, we have Dina, maybe we have Tamar. Not Tamar, that was later. Tamar was V'lo Yosef Oledato. He did not, he married an Isha Bas, well, it wasn't saying the Pasuk. Yehuda, he went down Bas Ish Adulami.
Ushmo Chira. That's Achira. Not the name.
Oh,
Bas
name,
Shua. There's a machlok.
Bas Shua.
If she was, her name was Bas Shua or her name was Shua.
Okay. That's the only one. Dina, and that's the Medrash. Even that's not so simple. So you have Bas Shua and Dina. The Moadim correspond to mysterious people that we don't even know who they are. That's very, very interesting. And another thing I want to point out that is very important to point
that's
out.
That's why the Gemara asked the question. It says, "Vayikol nefesh banav ubenosav." Who is the benosav? The Gemara asked that question. So, who is the benosav? Does it mean the wives? And if not, why are they not considered in the 70 nefesh? It's a whole plot Gemara, I guess, in Sota, but it's a very difficult answer.
Yeah, so it's hard to appreciate. Now, here's one. Here's something. There's something that's very interesting. We, very often, we associate Rosh Chodesh, as we started with today, Noshim, they did not give their jewelry to the Egel, but did give their jewelry to the Mishkan, which seems to indicate that the women did not participate one iota in the worshipping of the Egel. Isn't that what comes out? If the whole Yontif is for them because they did not participate. It's a very big problem saying that, because there's a very popular pasuk in the Zoysa Bracha, regarding Levi, Ulevi Amar Tumecha Vyurecha Leish Chastecha Sher Nisal Masas Rebel Meva Hoimer Leaviv Uleimo Lo. What's the Pastor Mayevsky? Lo Reisiv Hoimer Leaviv to his father, Uleimo to his mother, Lo Reisiv. I never saw you before. What does that mean? Pasha pshutoy shel mikra. What does that mean? Reuven, Moshe Rabbeinu, is giving a blessing to Levi. Levi, you're a great person. You know why you're so great? Because you said, Ha'omer le'aviv, to your father and your mother, I never saw you before. So the Medrash says that Levi murdered their own father if they worshipped the Egel. Let me cite you this Medrash. The Medrash says, here it is, Al pi ha'pasuk, Ha'omer le'aviv ulimo lo re'isiv dekoy al ha'leviim shehargu kiroyveim she'ovdu le'egel. Now, the Uin Barashi Dibar Maslo Omer Uvrabenu Khanan Sham the Bavur Aima Shaavdul Egel. So when it says there Homer Laviv Uli Imo, there's a problem. What do you mean that your father? Okay, that's also we thought the whole Shevet Levi did not worship. So it seems that there are people in Shevet Levi who did worship the Egel. And Uli Imo. In other words, Moshe said, Mila Shemilai. Moshe said, I want you to kill, to murder, to execute anyone who is involved in the worshipping of the eagle, even if it's your own father and mother. And they did it. And they said, they came to execute their mother, and their mother said, son, you're gonna execute me? I'm your mother. How could you kill me? Just because I worship the eagle, you're gonna kill your own mother? And this Levi said, I'm sorry, mother, I don't know who you are. It's not the mother I thought you were. My mother wouldn't worship an eagle. If you worship the eagle, you're not my mother. And Rashi says, the Leviim executed their own mothers if they were guilty in worshiping the eagle. This is the pshat of the pasuk. Omer le'aviv ule'imo lo re'isiv. They made believe they never saw their father and their mother if their father and the mother worshipped the eagle. They executed them according to the orders of Moshe Rabbeinu. Wait a minute. Didn't we just say this whole shiur that the women did not worship the eagle? And the women, they refused to part. They did not give their jewelry to the eagle. And they gave instead their jewelry to the Mishkan, which gives us the impression that the women did not at all participate in the making of the Egel. And here the Pasuk is telling us, according to Rashi, Pshut Shel Mikra, that Levi, not only did they participate in giving, that not only did they worship the Egel, which would seem to also indicate that they worship the Egel, so certainly they give a donation, right? They give a donation to the Egel. So this appears to be a contradiction. Because we are under the impression that there wasn't even one single woman in the whole world that believed in the eagle. And here it says clear as day that executed his own mother for the sin of worshipping the eagle. So they did worship the eagle. And someone goes so far, if this was in Shevet Levi, who were the strong ones, you can make a kal v'chomer, certainly there were women in the other Shvatim who worshipped the eagle. If Shevet, even amongst the Levim, the Pasuk is telling us that there were men and women that worshipped the Egel. Moshe said, Mila Hashem Elai. So Levi, they went and they killed their own relatives. But I thought that Shevet Levi, no one worshipped the Egel. That's not true. Even within Shevet Levi, there were rebels. There were men and women that worshipped the Egel. And Levim were caught in between their loyalty to their parents and their loyalty to Hashem. What should they do? And the Levi went and they actually took the lives of their own parents, including men and women. So how can you tell me, and if this was true, was going on in Shevet Levi, alachas kama v'kama, and the other Shvatim, where there was no loyalty at all, certainly we could assume the men and the women worshipped the eagle. If even in Shevet Levi the women worship the eagle, you're going to make a chil. Oh, the other Shvatim, they didn't worship it. And only in Shevet Levi. That's far-fetched to say that. Shevet Levi was the most loyal, devoted to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And even there, there are women who worship the eagle. So certainly in other Shvatim, the women did the same thing. How then can you say, oh, it's a women's holiday because the women didn't go give to the eagle? Where does it say they didn't give? It's a good kasha. This seems to be a problem. On the other hand, there is a deek in the pasuk that says Vayisparku me'al hanashim. They stole their jewelry, which seems that they didn't worship the egg. So the answer that they give is not a good answer. The answer is you have to say it's the majority. You can't say it's 100%. Definitely from here, this pasuk, we do clearly see there were individual women who worshiped the egel and believed in it and served and donated. But we have to assume that when Chazal say Vayisparku me'al oznehem, they forcefully grabbed the earrings off their ears of their wife against their will. They did not want to give. That was for the majority of the women did not. The majority is good enough. The majority of the women did not worship the eagle. That's good enough to make the day a day of celebration for Noshim. Okay, I wanted to conclude with one thing I wanted to mention about Noshim. I don't remember what it was. All right, but this is the basic, I think we went through the basic yesoidos of women and Rosh Chodesh. Okay, but I said tonight, let's conclude with this, is that tonight, to a certain degree, is the Ikar Rosh Chodesh of the year. This Rosh Chodesh tonight, Shvat, everything in life we all know has many dimensions. If someone will ask you, which Chodesh, Rosh Chodesh, is the most significant Rosh Chodesh of the year, 12/13, what would you say is the most significant? So many will say, Rosh Hashanah, Aleph Tishrei. It's the Rosh Chodesh for all of the Rosh Chodeshim. Yeah, okay, there's something definitely to that. You'll say, we downplay it. We don't mention in the Davni, we don't say Hal, all right, but still Rosh Hashanah is like, you know, the top of the top. Some will tell you Chodesh Nisan is the most important Chodesh. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim Rishonu Lachem Lachem Lachodesh Hashan. Okay, I get it. That's a very valid point. And also that was when the Mishkan, the Hakamas HaMishkan, some will tell you that the most important Chodesh will be Adar. It's the end. Acharon Chavev, it's the Gemar. You can play around. Everyone will tell you a different reason why a Chodesh should have a lot of significance. But one to add to that, collection, one very important piece of information, and that tonight is Rosh Chodesh Shvat. And besides the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu, he began Mishneh Torah, we discussed that another time, the Yoreach, the moon, is directly responsible for the fruit of the earth. The fruit of the earth, it's a pasuk. The pasuk says, it's in Vizoy Sabracha. What's the pasuk? The pasuk is, I'm forgetting the pasuk. The pasuk in Vizoy Sabracha. Take too long to go find the pasuk. But we know the pasuk relates the blessing of the fruit to the moon. Why? Because the gravity of the moon, the moon pulls. We know that when there's a full moon, the tide is thank you very much, Chumash. The tide of the moon, I need to pass on the Vizos HaBracha, or maybe it's in Hazinu, maybe it'll come to me in a few moments, the pasuk that says explicitly the fruit of the earth is directly related to the moon. Why? Gravity. And this is a scientific fact. You'll Google it. That what participates in the success of fruit coming forth from the earth, from trees, it is the gravity that the moon pulls from this earth. The moon is pulling things up. Any mass has a force of gravity. The moon is enormous. There is a pull of gravity from the moon bringing things upwards. And we see that in the world of reality when it comes to the tide. When there's a full moon, the tide can go very, very high, very high. Hurricane Sandy occurred in the middle of the month when there was a full moon. It was the perfect storm. The perfect storm wasn't just that the winds, the moon was a culprit in Hurricane Sandy. It was the middle of the month. It was a full moon. It pulled the tide very, very high, flooded all of these cities. So tonight is Rosh Chodesh Shvat. Shvat is Rosh Hashanah Lo Ilanos. Rosh Chodesh Shvat itself is L'divrei Beis Shammai, is Rosh Hashanah. And Tu B'Shvat, when the moon is in its tokvoi, when the moon is the fullest, it's Rosh Hashanah Lo Ilanos L'divrei Beis Hillel. The fruit needs the moon. The fruit, the sap in the trees, only ascends. The nutrients only ascend the tree through the gravitational pull of the moon. There's something about the moon. I don't know if science appreciates it to the fullest degree, yes or no, but Chazal make this point, and they base it on a pasuk, which unfortunately I cannot, it's on the tip of my tongue, but I can't just pull it out of my head at this moment. There's a pasuk that says, that connects the moon to the success of the fruit. It's explained scientifically. The gravitational pull of the moon is a partner in bringing the sap up the tree and bringing out the nutrients in the fruit to produce delicious fruit. So tonight, when we are coming to Rosh Chodesh and we're coming to celebrate the beauty, the significance of the moon, which represents everything that it does, Noshim, it's the Shechina, Klal Yisrael is like the Levana, where Machadesh, Kiddush Levana. When we are celebrating tonight Rosh Chodesh, in one dimension, this is the most significant Rosh Chodesh. Because since the moon's primary influence in this world is producing fruit, the Peiros HaSadeh, this is the month when that reaches fruition. Of the Peiros HaSadeh on Shvat, Rosh Hashanah Lo Ilanos, both L'divrei Beis Shammai and L'divrei Beis Hillel. May it be a Chodesh that comes upon us, L'tova V'Livracha. Thank you, everybody. Have a wonderful day. Be well.
Be by the bracha to Yosef. Yosef, Mevareches Hashem, Megas Kachayim, Yitol, Mishom, Roveses Tochas.
You know, Yerach, Yerach, Yerach Yerachim. Let me try to look at my computer what the pasuk is.